May it please the court?
It does.
Last year, the Missouri legislature made a very important change to the implied consent law when it amended Section 577.041 to remove the words, "None shall be given." Those words prohibited law enforcement officers from proceeding with a warrantless blood test after a drunk driver specifically refused a chemical test. Now that those words have been removed from the statute, there's no longer a barrier that would prohibit such a test. This case is about the Fourth Amendment. Specifically, it's about the exigent circumstances exception to the warrant requirement. And I wanted to begin by briefly pointing out that blood alcohol evidence really is extraordinarily unique. It's unlike any other sort of evidence. Not only is it the best, most probative evidence.
So we take the legislative history, say, taking out the words, "None shall be given," as opposed to, why couldn't the legislature just said, then you should take the test, or you can take the test?
Then
as
you can take the test.
As opposed to being silent on it.
Well, Your Honor, that's a good question, and I think
thank
it's a,
you. I was hoping it would be.
I think it's a separation of powers issue. I think the legislative body is reluctant to go ahead and interpret the law. That would be tantamount to the legislature saying the police can engage in conduct XYZ without violating the Fourth Amendment. And I think the language in that statute is clear. Especially in light of the Eastern District Court of Appeals decision in State versus Smith from 2004, where the Eastern District specifically held that those words, "none shall be given," were directed to law enforcement officers, and that it precluded law enforcement officers from proceeding with a warrantless test, but it did not preclude law enforcement officers from obtaining a search warrant. So the Eastern District Court of Appeals specifically addressed that language, and it's been addressed by many other courts as well, State versus Trumbull, Murphy versus Director of Revenue, and in some other cases, those specific words have specifically been addressed.
Now, I know the Eastern District Court of Appeals decision disappears, and the result there was in your favor. Is there anything in the analysis in that opinion that you disagree with, despite the fact that the result was what you would agree with?
No, Your Honor. I believe Judge Dowd made an excellent point. What Judge Dowd did, he looked at some of the cases from other states, particularly the Supreme Court of Wisconsin. He also looked at the Missouri case of State versus Lorette, and he looked at some federal appellate court decisions from various jurisdictions, most notably United States versus Reed from the Fourth Circuit and United States versus Berry from the Sixth Circuit. And what Judge Dowd pointed out when he's talking about the special facts language of Schmerber, he said it's true that in some of those cases, though not all, the facts are similar to Schmerber. But when the courts are applying the exigent circumstances exception, they're not relying on these so-called special facts. They're merely relying on the fact that alcohol dissipates quickly from the bloodstream. And as long as the police have probable cause to believe someone has violated the drunk driving laws, then the search is justified under the exigent circumstances exception. What the trial court ruled in this case, the trial court ruled that the Fourth Amendment was violated and the exigent circumstances exception did not apply. Of course, the landmark decision in this area of the law is the 1966 United States Supreme Court decision of Schmerber versus California. But the trial court held that Schmerber did not apply because of factual differences. The factual differences the trial court identified: in Schmerber, there was an accident and the driver was injured in the accident and he required emergency medical treatment. So the trial court ruled that since Mr. McNeely was not involved in an accident and since he was not hurt, then Schmerber simply did not apply. And Your Honor, this is a case of first impression in Missouri. And since we're dealing with a pure question of law, this court will review that decision de novo. And even though no Missouri case has ever directly confronted this issue, other state Supreme Courts have. And as I already mentioned, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin back in 1993 in State versus Bowling, and then once again in 2004 in State versus Faust, the Wisconsin Supreme Court held it is the nature of the evidence sought that determines the exigency. Wisconsin said we can interpret Schmerber in one of two ways. A broad interpretation would be that the natural dissipation of alcohol, that alone constitutes sufficient exigent circumstances to justify a warrantless blood draw, provided the police have probable cause. Alternatively, a narrow
how would that apply differently in cases where the allegation is driving under the influence of prescription medication or other mood-altering drugs as opposed to alcohol?
I believe that the same analysis would apply to a urine analysis or possibly even a blood analysis if they're able to. Any case that would violate the drunk driving laws, that would include 577.010, driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs, I believe the same analysis would apply. But alternatively, the Wisconsin Supreme Court also considered a narrow interpretation of Schmerber would be that the natural dissipation of alcohol from the bloodstream coupled with an accident, hospitalization, and a lapse of time for the police to investigate the scene of the accident, those factors would all have to combine to create the exigent circumstances. And Wisconsin held that the broad interpretation...
Of course, there's an accident in the party they want to take blood from. They just take the blood from the... whatever blood comes out of the it's not intrusive. They just take the blood out of something else they took blood from. I mean, the person bleeding, they can take the blood then without even asking any permission.
Well, and what we're dealing with here are blood samples taken at the direction of a law enforcement officer, right. And I believe that was something that the Wisconsin Supreme Court did address because they found that the broad interpretation of Schmerber was the most logical, most reasonable interpretation, and they made an excellent point. They said just because an accident is involved and just because someone is injured and has to go to the hospital, that in no way increases the risk that evidence will be lost.
Opposing counsel says times change and now there's tests that can be done that maybe couldn't have been done back then, but there's ways the evidence does not dissipate so quickly that you couldn't get a warrant and still get it. So those rationales don't apply.
And on the record, in this case, the record was that in Cape Girardeau County, on average, you're looking at a two-hour delay to obtain a search warrant. And in that 2 hours, with each passing minute, we're losing the most valuable, most probative evidence during that two-hour delay.
Do cases address whose burden it is to show that it was an exigent circumstance and therefore a warrant was not required?
Yes, Your Honor. Just last year, the Supreme Court of Oregon in State versus Machuca, they held that the evanescent nature of alcohol in the bloodstream is sufficient to justify a warrantless blood draw. And they specifically dealt with the issue. Basically, they flatly rejected an approach that would have required the prosecution to prove that they would not have been able to obtain a warrant in a timely manner. And what Oregon said, they pointed out that after a drunk driver is pulled over, their quote was, evidence is disappearing and minutes count. And I think the Oregon Supreme Court correctly held that the court's focus should be on the exigency created by blood alcohol dissipation, not on the speed with which a warrant could presumably be obtained. Because there are
Do I understand your argument correctly that if we would rule in your favor in this case, then in any situation, law enforcement could obtain a warrantless blood test?
If they have probable cause to believe someone has violated the drunk driving laws.
Yeah, because there would always be the circumstance of a time passing.
Yes, Your Honor, it would always be the case that the blood test would be the most probative, most valuable evidence.
So any time I'm an officer following somebody that I believe there's reason to pull over, I can't pull them over without a probable cause, or a probable cause to pull over for alcohol or find that, then I can ask for and obtain a blood sample, period.
That would be available to the law enforcement officers. They would still, in most cases, proceed with asking for their consent to take a breath test.
Why?
In most...
Well, I mean, I suppose you'd ask them to do the breath test, but after that, if they would say no, just say fine.
Right. If they refuse the breath test, then that would be available to the officer as an option to secure that evidence.
So in effect, it comes down to you're saying what our obligation would be is to look and see whether the facts were sufficient that had the officer gone to a judge, they would have gotten a warrant. And if we find the evidence would have been sufficient for issuance of a warrant, then we should, based on exigent circumstances, permit to draw without the warrant.
Yes, Your Honor, as long as the arrest is supported by probable cause, as long as the police officer has probable cause to believe.
By which you mean probable cause sufficient that a court, had it been applied to, would have issued a warrant? Or how do we determine?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that would be the case. In our case, we did have sufficient probable cause that I think a warrant would have been issued with the failure of the field sobriety test and the refusal to take a chemical test. So I think that would be the case.
But why should we not follow the Supreme Court's test of requiring it to be a case-by-case totality of the circumstances that the prosecution would have the burden of showing, rather than the broader finding by the Court of Appeals that there's always going to be exigent circumstances?
I think it's because of the very unique nature of blood alcohol evidence in itself. You know, a lot of times when we're talking about exigent circumstances, what the courts are talking about is the risk of destruction of evidence.
Mm-hmm. So what's wrong with requiring you to prove on a case-by-case basis that the circumstances justify, there are exigent circumstances?
Because with blood alcohol evidence, it's so unique, we're not just dealing with a risk that evidence will be destroyed or the possibility it will be destroyed. It's an absolute certainty.
Well, are you familiar with the concepts of metabolic curve or retrograde extrapolation?
Just in a very limited way.
We have cases all the time where defense lawyers, if they want to suggest that somebody wasn't at 0.08 or above at the time of the arrest, we require them to bring in an expert witness and testify about what the blood was at the time of the test and compare that against what they drank to determine what their actual content was at the time that we were driving. In the dram shop cases, people use expert testimony based upon time that occurred later all the time. And so we have experts that testify all the time that don't have a split-second type test, and it just goes to the weight of the evidence, if you will, not whether it's admissible or not.
And yes, Your Honor, I filed a reply brief where I tried to address some of those concerns. There is an open question as to whether or not retrograde extrapolation would be scientifically reliable in court. Of course, trial courts are vested with wide discretion, but the most troubling thing from the standpoint of a driving while intoxicated prosecution, most of the information that would be required to have an accurate extrapolation, it rests solely in the possession of the accused. And obviously we can't take the defendant's deposition. And in almost every drunk driving case, the defendants always say they just had two beers. So there's no way that we could determine exactly how much alcohol they had to have a reliable extrapolation.
Are there any other questions? Thank you. You have another chance to speak later. Your chance. What's this metabolic? What was it again? Metabolic food?
He probably knows more about it than I do.
Yes, okay. Your Honor. When you consume alcohol and it gets into your bloodstream, they're called pharmacokinetic calculations that say the alcohol will dissipate from the blood at a generally given rate of about 0.015 per hour after the drinking stops. And these
isn't
are.
Isn't that an important thing that you know when the drinking stops?
Not necessarily, and here's why. If generally, and I'm one who believes that the field sobriety testing, if done properly by well-trained officers, there's a pretty good idea that that fellow they're arresting or that woman is over 0.08. And if they're right in that and they've done their job well, then 0.015, how long will it take for all of that alcohol to be gone? It's going to take at least 4 hours. Now, if you take the test 3 hours later and they have 02, say, and you know that you've had them in your custody for 3 hours, 3 times 0.015, you can do the math and you can extrapolate a retrograde calculation what their alcohol level was when you got them.
Can't they come back and say, you know what, right before I was arrested, I slammed 3 shots, and so that was in my stomach, it wasn't in my bloodstream, so my blood would have gone up from that.
They can do that no matter what, Your Honor. They can do that if they have an accident and they're sitting on the side of the road and the officer comes along and say, I just downed this pint.
Yeah, but at that point, if you took the test right away, it wouldn't be in the bloodstream yet, and so, you know, it's a little different situation if you don't take it until 3 hours later. I think opposing counsel's reply brief says you don't know if they're on the way up or the way down, and that's the problem with doing the test later.
If you look at the documents that are used in Cape Girardeau County, generally they ask for 2 blood tests to be done when they get a search warrant, and then you can tell from that how it's moving. The problem with the per se rule that the state wants you to go to is that we're taking the people who are supposed to guard the Fourth Amendment out of the equation. We're turning it over to the police to draw all the inferences necessary to say, okay, we're going to invade this person's body, their privacy. We're taking the judges out of it. The judges have a role in that, all the way down to the associate judges who grant these warrants.
Can you address the issue of whether or not it's sufficient to protect that role to offer it after the fact when you attack it and you say, would this have been sufficient to issue the warrant? Why is that not adequate? And what broader risk to other members of the public would a per se rule present? So if after the fact you said, if I had gone, I would have gotten a warrant, is that the same test as?
I think that it perhaps ignores the facts of the situation and what can get created later.
We've always had exigent circumstances, and we've always had situations where if the evidence is going to disappear or be flushed down the toilet or something, and drugs.
Your Honor.
The police have a right to go in and get it.
That's true. We've always had exigent circumstances. And bear in mind, Schmerber didn't talk in terms of exigency. It talked in terms of emergency. And the federal case will tell you that what you're talking about is a situation where it's now or never. We get the evidence or we don't. And generally what you're talking about is the police at the door hear the toilet flushing and they're afraid the drugs are being flushed down the toilet. They'll be gone. You can't prosecute that person then. Or the fleeing felon is going to escape. There are exigent circumstances associated with that. You can do things without having to go get a warrant necessarily.
So if you had a situation where a judge was not available, then that might be an exigent circumstance or an emergency where it would be okay to proceed without a warrant,
I think that could be. If the officer was aware that there was no judge available, if the officer was aware that it took 5 or 6 or 7 hours to get warrants in his jurisdiction. I mean, I think the court
on the metabolic thing and the retrograde thing, is that 2 hours enough time to test for the alcohol is still a true test?
Well, I think it's more than enough. More than enough. The blood alcohol level is only going to go down by 0.03 in those 2 hours. 3 hours, 0.045. And if you read the cases that we have people with, in this case, Mr. McNeely's blood alcohol, according to the test, which we haven't gotten to all that evidence yet, but showed 0.15.
Is it a subjective test or an objective test? If the officer says, I know in my county it takes about an hour and a half, is that different than an officer who knew from experience it took 5 hours and you, or is there some objective test of what's a reasonable amount of time or what facts the officer has?
The case law says it's to be an objective test. And I think that's if you're
based on the particular facts.
And if you applying the standard of review to this case, this officer said there was no emergency. I wasn't worried about getting a warrant. I wasn't worried about finding a judge. I just didn't think about it. I didn't think I needed to.
But with the legislature's repeal of the language, and none shall be given, hasn't that kind of opened the door to give law enforcement more authority or more discretion to apply this objective test and to go forward in seeking these blood tests?
I think we get in dangerous ground whenever we interpret what the legislature says, let alone what they choose to take out of a statute. I don't know what that meant. I don't know if they were house cleaning, but I do agree that they could have said, and if you look at the case of State versus Johnson from Iowa, where Iowa has an implied consent law that has built into it the requirements of Schmerber. If an officer is confronted with a situation where he thinks it is an emergency, that he has to take the blood without taking the time to get a warrant, then he may do so. A legislature just north of this state figured it out. Let ours figure it out, too. If they want to rewrite the implied consent law to say that you can take this blood without a warrant, then let them adopt the facts of Schmerber, that it's not just that alcohol leaves the body at a given rate. Let it be that there is an emergency situation, some reason that we can't wait. And I think one thing that the court really needs to bear in mind is that the exigent circumstances, the analysis isn't to give the state the best evidence. It's to give them some evidence. It's the total loss of evidence. They talk about it dissipates every minute. Well, that doesn't answer the question. The question is if they have to wait long enough that all of the alcohol will disappear. And again, if an officer has done his job properly and formed his opinions based upon testing.
Of course, it's not about all the alcohol disappearing. It's alcohol below above 0.08.
I mean, if it
dissipates to 0.07, well, that's, there's still alcohol. But
no, Judge, if you look at 577.037, the legislature has adopted a statute that says if the blood alcohol test is under 0.08, then the court shall dismiss, unless, and there's three separate circumstances, one of which is there is a delay in the time from the taking of the specimen and the act. The legislature has acknowledged that blood alcohol can go down. So they're aware of the extrapolation theory. And again, they write these laws. Let them write them and make them clear. I don't think this court should have to divine what they meant when they took those words out of the statute.
Well, he has Wisconsin, and you have the Iowa legislature. Do you have any other courts to present?
I do. I've got the Supreme Court of Utah, Judge. And if you read, they've got two and I got two. All right, it's an even better. If you look at the most reasoned analysis that does a true look at Schmerber and what it said and why it said it and why it's still the law of the land, look at State versus Rodriguez, cited in our brief, some Supreme Court of Utah, and I think it's a 2008 or 9 case. And they were invited, as this court is being invited, to say the disappearance of alcohol from the blood is all it takes. Well, what that court said is, no, it's really a three-part test. One is time's gone by, and this goes back to Schmerber, time's gone by for the officer to do some other things. Three, time has gone by, or time will go by to get a warrant, and three, the alcohol is dissipating. It's not just the dissipation. It's got to be more than that.
Well, we don't even have to go beyond the Supreme Court case, do we? Because in that case, the U.S. Supreme Court said, it bears repeating, however, that we reach this judgment only on the facts of the present record. So clearly they are imposing, not based on a statute, but on the Fourth Amendment, that it is a totality of the circumstances test.
It is a totality test, and it still is, and it still should be in this state, and the state is asking you to ignore that. Mr. Kester said that the trial court said Schmerber didn't apply. In fact, the trial court applied Schmerber. It said, this is a run-of-the-mill DWI, and that's not to say that DWIs are something we shouldn't care about. It was just he was stopped, and he wasn't going to take a test, so they went to the hospital because it was nearby. They didn't even think about a warrant. And the judge found that the special facts, that's what Judge Lewis in his order in this case found, the special facts of the delay involved didn't exist. Therefore, Schmerber says you can't just go take the blood. You've got to get a warrant. And Judge Price, you mentioned something about anytime blood alcohol is involved. Well, let's assume you got a deputy who's just up the road at Mizzou and he finds himself a bunch of college students out having a kegger someplace. Well, we have a law in Missouri now that if you're under 21 and over 0.02, you've committed a crime. So this deputy can load these folks up and let's all go to the hospital for a mass bloodletting. Let's go take their blood. If it's a case of possession of a firearm while intoxicated, can we then go take blood there? If it's child endangerment on a theory that involves alcohol, can we do it there? There are serious ramifications that come from this that really probably ought to be dealt with the, from the legislative point of view. Let them take into account all of the things that can come from this. If that's what they intended, let them figure out how to write it correctly. But Schmerber's still the law of the land.
Thank you.
Unless there are any other questions, I'm going to give it up.
Thank you for well managing your time very well.
Thank you, Judge.
You may proceed.
Yes, I would just like to address, Mr. Wilson cited the Supreme Court of Iowa in State versus Johnson and the Supreme Court of Utah in State versus Rodriguez. As Mr. Wilson indicated, in Iowa, they had a unique statutory setting. In fact, the statute actually required the police to consider the delay necessary to obtain a warrant. Missouri has no similar provision, so the Supreme Court of Iowa decision really doesn't apply.
But to the extent you're saying it wouldn't be feasible to have that be this court's test, doesn't the fact that they have that by statute in Iowa indicate that Iowa finds that a feasible test to apply?
Yes, it does. But Missouri hasn't enacted a similar statute.
Right,
was my only point. And with the Supreme Court,
what are the particular facts of this case which justify a warrantless search?
The exigency created by blood alcohol dissipation.
Is that it?
Yes.
Are there any particular?
But that would apply in every single case.
Any single case where the police had probable cause to believe someone had violated the drunk driving laws.
Yeah, but they, I mean, you're, if we rule for you on this, and any time you have probable cause, you could argue that blood will dissipate, the blood alcohol content will dissipate, and we get a blood test.
Yes, Your Honor, because it's
no other special circumstances at all.
Well,
that is beyond the Supreme Court case, right?
Excuse me?
You'd agree that's beyond Schmerber.
Well, what I would argue with the Schmerber decision, what I found instructive when looking at Justice Brennan's cautious limiting language, look at the United States Supreme Court of Winston versus Lee from 1985. That was a case where the Supreme Court held it was unreasonable to compel a robbery suspect to undergo a surgical procedure to recover a bullet. And Justice Brennan wrote that decision in Winston versus Lee. And he used Schmerber as the framework for the court's analysis. And he begins the decision by specifically addressing this cautious, limiting language of Schmerber. And Justice Brennan says, this case, the search for the bullet, is precisely the sort of case we warned about, we cautioned about in Schmerber. And Justice Brennan goes on to discuss a balancing test, and he actually refers to it as the Schmerber balancing test, where you weigh the public interest against the invasion of privacy. And the Supreme Court has been loud and clear that a blood test is a minimal intrusion. As long as it's conducted in a safe manner by trained medical technicians in a hospital environment, it is a minimal intrusion. The language from Schmerber actually came from a case that predated Schmerber, Breithaupt versus Abram, where Justice Clark, speaking for a majority of the Supreme Court, said a blood test given in a hospital environment could not be considered offensive by even the most delicate among us. And that has been the standard of the Supreme Court. So the state, of course, has a very strong interest in enforcing their drunk driving laws. So when you engage in what Justice Brennan referred to as the Schmerber balancing approach, there's no question that the state's interests far outweigh any invasion of privacy under a Fourth Amendment analysis.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.